Paid for by IMIC Incorporated.
The Cure with Amy Cabo is brought to you by IMIC Research. Life can bring many difficult situations, domestic violence, addictions, poverty, and even sexual abuse by your loved ones. Welcome, Amy Cabo and The Cure.
Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us today. I'm your host, Amy Cabo, and this is The Cure. I created this show as a safe space and to show that there is hope after going through difficulties, no matter what type. I'm trying to use testimonials to the effect and inviting in professionals and speakers that can help with suggestions. As a survivor, I hope to inspire others, encourage transparency, and find strength in knowing that those who suffer are not alone. Those that heal against insurmountable odds do exist. I'm here joined by Boris Nikolov.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Some of us suffer from feeling like a failure. I had to make mistakes to learn the lesson well. And when I got it wrong, I learned how to do it right. Every time I fell, I learned to get back up again and came back better. I had to fail to foster the desire to keep on going. Today, we're going to talk about how to use your mistakes to succeed. Today's guest is Arnie Malham. Arnie Malham is the author of Worth Doing Wrong, The Quest to Build a Culture That Rocks, and founder president of BetterBookClub.com, an entrepreneur and speaker who focuses on improving work cultures. Malham previously built and sold two successful businesses, CJ Advertising, which became the largest full-service brand-building agency in the U.S. exclusively for law firms, and a call center, Legal Intake Professionals. He was selected by the Nashville Business Journal as an award winner for the most admired CEOs and the best in business. Malham says he repeatedly got it wrong in all aspects of running a business, but mistakes pushed him and his companies forward. Ultimately, he operated two highly successful businesses. He also says, you've got to be willing to get it wrong on your way to get it right. He can discuss with us how companies can build more free-thinking, creative cultures by being unafraid of failure and seeing errors as a step towards solutions. All of us have made mistakes. And I wonder, is there something that we should cherish, that we should appreciate, or should we condemn it and run away from our mistakes? Do we take it as a learning lesson? Or do we just feel like we're a failure, like we weren't good enough, like it didn't get us there? But that's just life. Life is full of challenges, and there'll always be an opportunity to try and try again. And I always say persistence pays. So if you fail, I always tell people, try and try again. Because it is after making an error that you do learn, that you learn how to do it right, and then you can continue. We're all here in this world together, and we all have challenges, but that's what challenges are. That's what helps us grow. For example, I have my challenges. Just recently, I was in trial for 5 days. This trial had to do, it happened 3 years ago, with my daughter almost getting killed. She had gotten a roommate from Craigslist who had stayed in her house for 2 weeks. And on Valentine's 2016, he tried to kill her. He choked her, crushed her skull against the floor many times, breaking her skull, her orbital bones of her eyes, her nose, her mouth, and then he cut up her face. he did all that. And it was terrible that such a thing could happen. It's incredible. And then you have to realize that you have to appreciate life for what it is. Because after all, after he tried to kill my daughter and did that, God provided a miracle and she lived. And thank God she lives. And after being in court and seeing the evidence and learning all the things I didn't know, discovering that it was much worse than I thought, I realized just what a huge miracle it was that she was alive. But it doesn't come with consequences. In court, that's the physical stuff. That's what you can see. But now, for the rest of her life, she's left with the unseen. But here's the bright side. He will not do this to another girl, to another person. No parents will have to suffer like we did. And she lived to save the rest. And the jury came back. He was found guilty with premeditated first-degree attempted murder and false imprisonment. And it was just nice to witness justice in a world that I know can sometimes be unjust. And I thought for a moment, no matter what the outcome, it was just nice to see Team Danny, all these people come together to care so much, to put on such a good case, and to make it so that this man cannot do such a horrendous thing to someone else. But what did I learn from this? I learned unconditional love. Because see, most people don't know what it's like to live with a brain-injured adult. And you learn that you just have to love unconditionally. That even though they may have changed, they see things in a negative light, they imagine scenarios that never occurred. And to tell you the truth, right, wrong, or indifferent, whether they happened or not, whether it's truthful or not, it doesn't matter. That's her perception. So what do you do? I used to tell her, Danny, I love you, when she was healing, the 3 years that I helped her heal. She would say, I love you too. 3 years later, Danny, I love you. She responds, you're lying. You manipulated me my whole life. And she remembers no happy memory. But I do have faith in God. And I know that this too shall pass. And people say, time heals all wounds. Yes, time does heal all wounds. But just like someone who has a condition, a medical condition that's chronic, that cannot be cured, this is something that I don't know enough about. The only thing that I read recently is that with severe brain injuries, it does get better, but then it gets bad again. And the prognosis is unknown. You don't know. I don't think it's something that cures by itself, and I don't think there is a cure for it. How can I help her? I don't know. It's hard for a brain-injured person to realize they need help. And so all I can do is pray. But everything in life is a learning lesson. This is the girl that I fought for all my life. And had I not been in a position with the custody battles that I felt that the general master was going to take her away, I would not have known that I can write a motion and recuse a general master. So sometimes things have to happen for you to discover what you're capable of. Situations happen for you to realize how to be more understanding and more loving. And so the world just goes like that. Meanwhile, Arnie Malham, he found it interesting that it was important to make mistakes. That's how you succeed in life. And that's how you move forward. And he was our guest today, but We're waiting for him to call in. So I thought I'd spend some time with you guys and let you know you're not alone. We do suffer. We are suffering. But everything that I've been through, I have learned from. And you come to think why so many years of suffering, why 14 years of a custody battle. Well, maybe it took that long for me to finally get it. Who knows? I still don't know. I'm still trying to figure it out. But tell me about your successes and your failures. Actually, you have something you can share with us. How many times have we had to start over and over and over again? Did we get it right? When? The third time?
The third time is right, yes.
The third time around.
Well, you need to try. You need to learn from your mistakes and go on. Well, Don't give up.
You know, Ernie just called. Ernie.
Hey, I'm here.
How are you? Thank you for joining us.
I'm so sorry I'm late. Thanks for getting the conversation going. I appreciate the momentum.
Oh, thank you, thank you. No, these things happen. It's fine. But I was so excited. I was so excited to speak to you. And for those who are tuning in, Ernie's the author of Worth Doing Wrong. And he is in the quest to build a culture that rocks. And he's the founder and president of the Better Book Club. com. He can discuss with us how companies can build more free-thinking, creative cultures by being unafraid of failure and seeing errors as steps forward to solutions. Arnie says, you got to be willing to get it wrong on your way to get it right. And all of us have made mistakes. Arnie, tell us about how it is that we have to get it wrong to get it right.
Well, all of us go through life. The truth is that's how we learn everything, right? Is getting it wrong on the way to getting it right. And that's how we learn to walk. That's how we learn to talk. That's how we learn to make our case, our arguments. It's how we learn everything. And we're applauded for it when we're young. You know, we're encouraged to do the things that move us in the right direction. But as we get older, we start getting penalized for the things we do wrong as opposed to encouraged for the things we do right. And so what we've tried to do in business and in life is just reverse that back and just encourage the getting it wrong on the way to getting it right.
Right. Take it as a learning lesson rather than feeling inadequate, like you weren't able to do it and you weren't good enough. I remember when I was a kid in painting school, I had to make a portrait of myself, and it was the first time I painted. And I'm a bit of a perfectionist, so because it wasn't perfect, I didn't paint again. I didn't think I was capable. And that's a mistake, isn't it?
It is, and it's a responsibility that we all have, not just to ourselves, but to everyone around us. To everyone around us, the responsibility to say yes, the responsibility to give encouragement, the responsibility of making people feel great about failing toward success and not terrible for one mistake.
And Arnie, you are very successful, I have to say, and I think that's wonderful. I want to talk to you more about this. You have a phrase called failing up, and I want to expand on that and how an organization can operate by that motto when we return. For those that are just tuning in, I'm your host, Amy Cabo, and this is The Cure. Today's show is focusing on learning from your mistakes. Welcome back to the show. For those that are tuning in, I'm Amy Cabo, and this is The Cure. We're joined today by Arnie Maham and Dr. Boris Nikolov. We're talking about how to have a positive attitude despite the circumstances. Arnie, I spoke about the phrase failing up and operating by that motto. Can you expand on that, please?
Well, I'll reflect back to something you also said before. You said I was very successful, and I have been fortunate in business and family, in life. But the path here has been full of misconceptions on my part. As a leader, I didn't quite understand how my culture was going to develop. As a leader, I didn't understand how to separate rules from guidelines. As a leader, I didn't understand how important the team was to any family or company. And so these are all areas that if we don't fail up, we get settled into being the same old, and we have no chance of success.
Right. And, you know, I play that song because I believe that is power, letting nothing hold you back. But I think you said something very important, teamwork. Because, yeah. I mean, really, we do need each other. We can't really, I mean, if this was an island and we were alone, I don't think we would survive. But teamwork is very important, yeah. And keeping the harmony. Now, how could you encourage your team when they're failing? What are the things that you tell them to keep the spirit up?
So there's two areas here of importance. One is this concept of abundance versus scarcity. And with abundance, you believe that everyone's win is your win and that your win is for everyone. And so it's not that someone has to lose for you to win. It's that we all win together. And the second one is a concept I relate to trust. That with our team, what we strive for every day was an environment where everyone that walked into work had a very high level of trust that everyone at work was there to help them get better. And the inverse of that is that as you walk through that door every day, you're there to help everyone around you get better. Now, the swirl of this activity lets everyone come in with confidence that the people around them are cheering for them because they know they have the confidence that they're cheering for their teammates. And we found that just that positive attitude, as opposed to Susie's out to get me, Daryl's going to eat my lunch, and no one wants me in the boardroom, just that concept of they're all cheering for my success lifted our entire business forward.
Yes, and I think that's how entrepreneurs are trying to keep the office culture positive when mistakes multiply. I know that we have an office, and we do have meetings, and we like to hear the concerns of those who work with us, and we like to hear ideas and let them know that they're part of the team. What are some of the things that you some of the main things that you can outline, that you outlined in your workbook, to change someone's outlook, let's say from a pessimistic point of view to an optimistic point of view, negative to positive?
Well, every business culture, every business has a culture, right? It's either a good culture, a medium culture, or a bad culture. But whatever it is, it has a culture. And what I've seen in business is that every culture has a leader, and that leader is the leader of the business. And so we work a lot with the leaders of businesses to help them understand one thing, that culture reflects leadership. And if you don't have the culture you want, it's because you're not the leader you need to be. And that's a harsh thing to hear sometimes, but I had to realize it about 10 years into my business journey. And the sooner leaders realize that they have a responsibility to create the culture they want, the faster we can get on with doing it. Does that make sense?
And yes, but when do you know that you have the right culture and you're not in the wrong environment?
Well, and that's a great question, because an individual may find that they are not compatible with the culture they're in, that they don't thrive in that culture. And maybe it's not because it's bad, it's just not for them. And so realizing your values and the leader's values don't align, that's a major issue when your values don't align. As a leader, if you're hiring people or keeping people whose values don't align with yours, it's a major problem. When I talk about values, we can go as deep in that as you want to. But if we don't believe the same thing in terms of how we're going to run this business, how we're going to behave at the work at our workforce, how we're going to interact with our teammates, then it's real hard to then end up in the culture that you want.
Right. I mean, I think that if you're a leader, it's important to lead by example. And I think that everyone pretty much follows suit. And I think that that would help. And it gives some kind of guidance, but I think it has to start with the person, doing the right thing. I know that a lot. Go ahead.
So leaders tell me a lot, they have a problem in their business. And they go, oh, I just got to find the right people. And I stop them right there and I said, hey, your job, that might be an answer if you went and found the right people. But how about we develop your culture such that the right people find you? Wouldn't that make life better if we could create the culture we want in our company and then those attracted to that culture found us as opposed to us always trying to find the quote-unquote right people? And so I would push out to your audience to think about, are you creating the culture you want to attract the right people? And if you're working in a culture that does not make you a better person, a better human being, in today's job market, you have every opportunity to go find the culture that does.
Right, a culture that's aligned with you. And let's say you don't find the right people. Can you train that person to become the right people?
Well, because you can train skills, but you can't train values. You can train skills. The best craftsmen, artists, computer graphic people. We can be better writers. We can be better strategic thinkers. We can train and educate to be the best in the industry, but values are a whole different story.
Well, I know that a value that I find important is persistence, determination, yep. hard work,
yep.
you know, yep. belief, and never give up. It's,
you know, Arnie thinks the same. Business is hard, he says.
Well, yes, and I don't know. I mean, It is difficult because even though I'm the president, it's Boris who runs it. Ooh. And it's so much fun. He gets to be the bad guy, not me.
Well,
but we try not to be bad guys because I still do believe the old school saying, you get more bees with honey. But it's tough. It's a tough balance when you're a boss. That's why I don't like to be a boss.
Here's the path we always took is cheer for the person so that the person will cheer for you, right? If I'm focused on making my people better human beings, then I know that there's a much better chance they're going to focus on making my company a better company.
Acknowledgement.
So as a CEO of two different companies employing hundreds of people, I've thought of it as my job every day to come in and say, how do I make this a work environment where my people can succeed? I don't want to do their job for them. I don't want to micromanage them. I don't want to tell them what to do. I want to give them the tools, the equipment, and the environment where they can be successful.
And you're successful too that way. There you go.
And isn't it true that so often when we work with people and they make a mistake, we notice the mistakes, but when do we stop and take notice for the things that they've done great or they thought outside the box or they did something great? Do we acknowledge them? Do we say great job to encourage good behavior? I think that's important too.
Of course.
For the culture, that is.
We had program after program that did nothing but focus on recognition of success. So anytime we got the outcome that was remotely close to where we were looking, we let everyone in the business know who did it, how they did it, and why they did it. And we even went as far as to celebrate failures in public to recognize the fact that no one gets in trouble for making a mistake or having a failure. We always get encouraged to learn from it and rock forward. And so recognizing success should be a huge part of your weekly and monthly cycle. But recognizing failures and letting people know it's okay is also a good way to do it.
After all, we are human. But for those tuning in, I'm your host, Amy Cabo, and this is The Cure. We're going to continue talking to Arnie Maugham when we come back. Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to The Cure with Amy Cabo, live every Friday at 2 p.m. on amycabo.com, or you can call in 305-541-2350. Again, that's 305-541-2350. Please call us and share how you can stay positive. And I'm here joined by Dr. Boris Nikolov and Arnie Maugham. Arnie, when it comes to prioritizing success, moving forward, or growing, from your observations, what are some or experiences do businesses often get into trouble when they try to diversify rather than maximizing their strengths or niche?
Well, I am certainly a believer in being the best as you possibly can in what you do. And I stop short of saying in everything you do, and focus on what you do. Our businesses grew in very niche categories, but we also grew our people in very niche categories. We had graphic designers who were great graphic designers, and if I judged them on how well they did writing, they wouldn't do as well. And if I judged our writers on how well they did graphic design, or our video editors on how well they bought media time, like specializing gives us all an advantage in the things that either make us money so that we can live the lives we want, or fulfill a hobby that warms our heart. And so I believe in specialization to the max. Absolutely.
I believe that you should only do something that you do really, really good. I mean, you can try at things that you don't do bad. I mean, that you do bad. But how do you identify your strength if you're not sure you have one?
Well, you know, I've studied a lot about how people get things they're good at confused with their strengths. So just because you're good at something doesn't mean it's a strength. I think the judgment for when something's a strength is that it brings you joy when you do it. You take pride in the work. The time goes by quickly. That you feel honored to do the activity and not stressed over it, or energy drained from it, or certainly angered by it, if you will. So what brings you joy is most likely a better indication of your strength than just something you happen to be good at but doesn't fulfill you.
So basically feeling accomplished and have the results being positive. In other words, doing some good or other, whether it just be being productive. I understand.
Yeah, I think that pride point, I'm proud. If you're proud of your work, then you're more likely to do more of it, and it's more likely to bring you energy.
Well, you know, I did read that God did say, do your best at everything. He also said, be courageous and of good cheer. All these things are of good value. And we have the wrong idea. You know, we think we want things easy. No, that's not true. There's no merit in easy. We're never proud of ourselves when we do something easy. That's something everyone else can do. It's something that when we can do something difficult and we do it well and it was hard work, then we're proud of ourselves. Then our self-esteem goes up. We feel like we're capable of doing something great.
That's right. And we often, two things that make me feel great is, one is when I cheer for others and they do well. Like that's a great feeling to know that you helped build momentum. Whether it's a team on the field, whether it's your teammate in the office, whether it's your family member that's close to you, when you cheer someone forward and they have success, that's a winning formula that serves us all well. You know, it's again, we're back to abundance and not scarcity.
Well, it's important to build momentum. It's important to get things going. I like to say that Boris takes care of, you know, the technical part, the business aspect, and I take care of making sure everyone's happy.
Yeah.
Now all you need to do is, Amy, is read his book, Worth Doing Wrong, right? And you get that other point.
But come on, Arnie, share with us. How did you do wrong and how did you get it right? Because I have a feeling you know a lot about this.
Yeah, well, I spent a lot of time as a boss that no one would want to have. I wanted to create rules for people to do it my way and not their way. I cared more about when they worked as opposed to the work they did.
Wow.
I thought that my ideas were great and theirs were okay. Like that was the business I created for myself, and I didn't realize what was happening. And then I heard this phrase, culture reflects leadership. It came to me. I was listening to it was a presentation by a gentleman named John DeJulius. He's one of the best customer service experts on the planet. And he utters those words. He said, culture reflects leadership. And it was in that moment that I realized I was the leader. And the culture I had was exactly the one that was reflected by my inability to be a leader. And so at that moment, we started making changes to how we treated our people, how we got rid of rules and replaced them with very easy guidelines. We started valuing people's work and not their time. And so that's the change we made in our moves.
Well, I mean, I suppose the truth is in the middle, though, right? I mean, the rules should be there, even though you put them as a guideline. But I mean, they shouldn't be having an organization without specific rules. I mean, I hear you.
I don't believe that, Doc. No? I don't believe that, Doc. I believe that rules are written for the few, and one person. Here's what happens in a lot of organizations. One person does something wrong, and so we write a rule to keep them from doing that again. And then that affects everyone in a negative way. Oh. What we need are guidelines for those that almost always do it right. And then we go deal with the one person that does it wrong, and we help correct their behavior, but not at the expense of everybody.
Wow.
I understand. Good. And for those of us that don't know, I mean, culture, you mean by a collection of beliefs, everyone believing in the same values and having the same work ethic, correct?
That's right. That's right. We believe in a system of core values, and we don't ask our team members to necessarily go home and practice those values. But these are the values we want you to use when you're making decisions at work. Now, that means you're going to let them make decisions at work, which is a part of your culture as well, right? But these are the values I want you to use when you're making decisions at work. And the other part of a culture is where we're all going. Where are we trying to get to as a business? What's our big, audacious goal? And so we share values, we share a destination, we share an office, and we share encouragement. And those things, that's our culture. Now, does that make it perfect for anyone? No. But having values, having a destination, and having guidelines make for a much better business than one that has no values, no common destination, and a bunch of rules about what you can't do.
Well, and that makes you successful. There you go.
Yeah, and I thought it was just about sharing the love. I mean, just sharing the love. But that makes your book worth reading. I mean, yes, and it's very important that the people that we work with, that they feel like they're part of a team and that they're important. And it's true. You helped teach me something, because I thought that rules were important, and because I'm a law follower. I like to do things by the book and do things right. And I am a rule follower. And that is a very unique way of looking at it. Give them a guideline of how to do it better. And
yeah, I think ultimately we believe that flexibility is the new 401k. So the more flexibility we can give our people in terms of when they work, where they work, how they work, And give them a path and not a exact, you know, you have to do it this way, then that flexibility gives people the self-esteem and the decision-making they need to move their life forward. And we believe that the kind of the old way of thinking of things is the factory worker doing it exactly the way you want them to do it. That's just not the world we're living in today, and not a place that our young workforce wants to be in.
So let's say that you give, you know, you have, you're working with someone and you give them something to do and they don't do it, or they do it differently. Then at that point, do you accept their new idea, or do you ask them, I needed you to do it this way, and could you tell me why you did it this way? Or how do you go about that? How do you do the flexibility part?
Yeah. Well, is it, by the way, when they did it differently, is it possible that it's better? And I'm assuming you meant it's probably not better, or it's not as good as you want it to be. And so the way that I would encourage people to approach that is exactly very close to what you said. Tell me why you did it this way, and I love this, but let's try it another way, and then let's let the client decide, or let's let the quality inspector decide, or let's let to give people that freedom to know how to do it wrong so that they can finally get it right. And it's just possible it's just possible that one of the times they do it wrong, it'll actually be better.
Yeah. So it's worth doing wrong then.
Yeah, that's the idea, I guess, like, of our conversation today,
like,
huh?
Like worthdoingwrong.com.
Yeah. And like, here's a crazy thing we did to help grow our people. We paid people to read. We called it Better Book Club.
Oh, that was my next question. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Tell us a little bit more.
So instead of me reading a book and telling everyone that they had to read it and that we were going to talk about it next month, what we said is, I like reading and I learn when I read. I want you to go read something, and when you do, I'm going to pay you if you just tell me a little bit about the book. And so I didn't tell them what to read. I didn't tell them when to read. I didn't tell them how to read. I just said, go read something and come back and tell me about it. And so over the years, we paid out thousands of dollars to our people to read books that made them better human beings.
Well, hold on. Are you getting paid by Amazon or something, or Barnes & Noble?
What a great incentive.
I'm joking. I'm sorry. But sorry to interrupt.
We paid them to become better human beings, so that they would use their skills to make us a better company. And it worked.
And it paid off.
Because better people make better companies. That's all companies are, right? Just a collection of their people. And so as we grew our people, we grew our company. And instead of me having to come up with all the ideas, they came up with the ideas because they were reading business books and self-improvement books. And we didn't care whether those books made them a better parent, a better spouse, better with their finances, had less anxiety, or it was teaching them great business skills, negotiating, advertising, marketing, writing. As long as they were improving as people, we were glad to pay them. We paid about, on average, about $100 a book, and each person would earn, folks could earn $300 to $500 a year just by reading. Now, that's a crazy idea.
That's a great idea. I love it. What a great incentive.
It improved our people. It was a fraction of the cost of sending someone to a conference or a seminar, and they retained way more information.
So smart.
Wow, that is good.
And not only that, not only were you helping the business and helping yourself, but you're also helping them. I'm sure they felt good about the fact that they were reading, plus they exercised their brain.
That's right. And guess what? They believed something that I've hoped that I was true, that I cared enough about them to invest in them.
Nice.
So me pouring confidence into them gave them the confidence to take that knowledge and become better human beings.
Wow, nice. I spoke to a business coach once that said accountability, responsibility, and ownership. That's above the line. That's what we want to live by. Not blame, excuses, and denial. That's below the line. So the values that she wanted to install was the values above the line. And she said that this company went from making nothing to making millions just on that principle alone.
Yeah, that's powerful stuff, right? We want to give people every chance to be successful. You know, as opposed to only one chance, because one chance produces stress, anxiety. And what we want to do is give them additional chances. We want to cheer for them along the way. Now, there's a point to where we're all in the wrong place. We've been given every opportunity to be successful, and success is not going to come at this time, at this place. I am not suggesting that you go beyond that reasonable boundary. But what I am suggesting is as you lower anxiety and pressure in a workplace, and as you increase flexibility and autonomous thinking, good things happen.
Like, for example, I think that the people we work with will pay more attention to the training for the studies if we give them an incentive. Like, we pay them to pay attention to what they're training for. I love it.
If you reward the things you want, it is more effective than penalizing the things you don't.
And you get less frustrated. How nice.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. But
it's good stuff.
Arnie, you've been wonderful. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for your ideas. I'm definitely going to go to worthdoingwrong.com because I certainly have learned a lot from you today. And we've come to an end, unfortunately. Arnie, feel free to come back to this show anytime. I'd love to learn some more. And for more, any more information, guys, you can go to amycabo.com under guests, and you can find Arnie's book and any information that you would like to have on any of the guests. This has been The Cure. I'm your host, Amy Cabo. Thanks for listening.
Life can bring many difficult situations: domestic violence, addictions, poverty, and even sexual abuse by your loved ones. The issue is not stay there, but to overcome all obstacles and show that with the love of God, your husband, and your family, you can succeed. Love is the answer, God is the cure, reveals from a very sincere and honest position Amy Cabo's life, a warrior who didn't give up and achieved the dream of her life. You can get to know more about her and her story on www.godisthecure.com or buying her book on amazon.com.
If you suffer from persistent depression, call Neurosciences Medical Clinic to schedule a free consultation for new effective FDA-approved treatments such as intranasal ketamine or NeuroStar TMS, a no-medication treatment. Neurosciences Medical Clinic. Call now, 786-600-7005. Neurosciences Medical Clinic, 786-600-7005, 786-600-7005.
The Cure with Amy Cabo was brought to you by IMIC Research, 786-310-7477 or www.godisthecure.com. Tune in every Friday at 2 p.m. for The Cure with Amy Cabo right here on 880 The Biz.